I was with Chosen People Ministries for a very short time, 26 years. And my ministry partner and I, if this is Doug, raise your hand, Doug. That's Doug. You want to talk to him. He's a nice guy. He makes me look really good. Started a new ministry for the very reason that I'm going to share with you. I started this morning, but I'm going to share with you this in this message. Left in really good terms, Chosen People Ministries. I have only friends there, and I continue to recommend people stay connected with that mission. And if the Lord leads you to do so, you can also support us. We're, you know, support raise 100%, so we appreciate the support of people like you. And I just wanted to make that clear when I was... Oh, one quick announcement.
You guys are doing something very dangerous up there. You didn't start the clock. So let her rip, Tamer Chip.
Yes. I got 2 free minutes and I'm going to use them. To the Jew first. Okay. So... Where was I? My 26 years at Chosen People Ministries were wonderful. I was serving as original director, doing a lot of good things, but it was pulling me in a lot of directions that was also pulling me away from focusing on such a time as this, what's happening right now. So I had to make a choice. After much prayer, we decided to start our own ministry, and that's what Shalom and Messiah is all about. We'll tell you more if you come visit the table, if you talk to me throughout the weekend. And again, if you go to shalomandmessiah.com, you can subscribe to all the things you can get for free, and you can also support us, and we do need your support. Thank you. So, now, we have a little bit of a sound issue for some of the videos that I want to, the clips that I want to show. So if they don't sound too good, I will stop them and I will just go without them. But I want to try because the first thing I want to show you right now is a short movie that is going to set the stage for the rest of the message that I want to share today. So, Michael, if we can try this to see if it sounds okay. If we can hear it. Can't see it. Oh. Give me a thumbs up if it's clear.
Some things that time does not erase. Sometimes the only way forward is by facing the past. This is my story. I lived in Germany during the Nazi Holocaust. A railroad track ran behind our small church, and each Sunday morning at the exact same time, we heard the whistle from a distance and then the clacking of the wheels moving over the track. It was at the same time every Sunday. We felt the rattling from the trail of cattle cars, accompanied by the screeching of metal that would echo through our church walls. It was a Sunday in the spring that would change my life forever.
Jesus said, "Do not resist an evildoer. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. Loving your enemy. This is a far better way. This is how we were called to live. To understand this unnatural virtue, we must look to Jesus Christ as our model and our guide. His meekness was his strength. His silence, his statement to the world. We must pray for those who persecute us. Prayer is the mechanism that reaches heaven and moves mankind. Prayer. It's easy to underestimate prayer. But this quiet action Jesus, we will learn. We learn to choose as He chooses. We learn to love our enemies and allow God's peace to rule within our hearts. Jesus, unser Trost und Leben, nimm den Tod wahr.
behind you. Behind you.
Christians yet did nothing to intervene.
Every time I watch this, it's very hard to watch, isn't it? And this, it's important because the next question I need to ask all of us, I want to talk about redeeming the past and the question that I have is, have Christians missed the mark in making the Jewish people jealous? Have Christians made mistakes? Well, we heard this morning from Dr. Reagan, and from my first message and from Dr. Reagan, very clearly that the church has a big part to play, had a big part to play in anti-Semitism. In Romans 11:11, we read, "I say then, they did not stumble as to fall, did they? May it never be, but by their transgression, salvation has come to the Gentiles to make them jealous." That is the Word of God, but I don't think the church has been very good at making my people jealous, really. But there's hope. And that's really what I want to spend time on this afternoon. But the first thing I want to tell you about is, and it really, it's a perfect illustration of what Dr. Reagan spoke about this morning when he talked about the history of the church. He covered some of those things. He didn't have time to cover them all, but I put them together in a graphic, in a visual that I think makes sense to me. It's what I call the Christian baggage. When you talk to your Jewish friends, you cannot ignore the Christian baggage. And it's this big suitcase that has all those things inside that your Jewish friend knows about. The Crusades, the Inquisition, the pogroms, Luther, the Holocaust, the Black Plague, forced conversions, blood libels, host desecration, the greedy Jew, the ghettos, the expulsions, all those things that your Jewish people, your Jewish friend will know about, that you need to know about. You heard some of it this morning, and actually there's quite a bit of details on that history in my in this book. I'm really bad at speaking about my books, but if you want a lot of information on this, it's in this book, End Times Antisemitism. Half of it has the history of antisemitism with a lot of footnotes. So I want to talk about what we just saw in that movie, what I call the bystanders. Because the model, the biblical model, is actually the opposite of that. The biblical model is found in the story of the Good Samaritan. In Luke 10:30-33, Yeshua replied and said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers, and they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down, a priest, Jewish man, a Levite, was going down that road. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side." Just didn't want to look. Didn't want to get involved. "Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side," another Jewish man. "But the Samaritan, not exactly a friend of the Jews, who was on a journey, came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion." So here we see the enemy of a Jewish person actually doing something good to help that Jewish person. And that's, I'm not saying we're enemies, but I'm saying that if an enemy of the Jewish people can find it in himself as a human being to help a Jewish person, how much more would a Christian, should a Christian who reads their Bible and know the place of Israel and the place of Israel in the Bible in God's plan, how much more should they do something to help Jewish people? And that's where I want to go today in this message. I want to try to play this very short clip of a Holocaust survivor. I think he's still alive. I forgot his last name, but he's going to talk about upstanders and bystanders. Let's see if we can hear him. I hope so.
In short, if my family, wouldn't have had upstanders during the Holocaust. Upstanders who were not Jewish. They were Polish. They were Christians. They were Germans. They were even Nazis. But they became upstanders. And if we wouldn't have had them in our lives, I would not be standing here. I would be dead. Upstanders do. They create. Not knowingly, but they create lives. They don't destroy. Don't you walk away if you see somebody being bullied? No. Be an upstander. Be a person who stands up and speaks out. Speak up and say something which is the right thing to do, the right thing to say. So whatever you do in your life, starting today, don't be a bystander.
Oscar Knobloch, that's his name. So don't be a bystander. Who were the bystanders? They were not the rescuers going back to the Holocaust, okay? They were not the victims. They were not the direct perpetrators. A bystander, you might have heard me say this before, but it's worth repeating. A bystander who does nothing only facilitates the work of a perpetrator. Looking the other way, not being involved, does not help. I want to tell you a quick story. Summer of 1942, Paris, France. On the left is Maurice Weinzweig. On the right is Evelyn and Bert Weinzweig. You see that they are wearing the yellow star that Jewish people had to wear during the war. And as Maurice was hiding in the cellar of the house where they lived, the Gestapo came, now this is a real story of Maurice and Evelyn and Bert. This is obviously a stock photo, but it's to illustrate what happened. The Gestapo officers came to get Maurice at his home. Maurice complied, promising to his family that he'd be back. He disappeared in the smokestacks of Auschwitz and never returned. So the bystanders were people who did nothing. Now, Maurice ended up, his name ended up being in Le Mémorial de la Déportation des Juifs de France, the memorial of the deportation of the French Jews, where you see his name right there, Maurice Weinzweig, born in Olika, Russia in 1898. And right there. And so that book was published in the 70s, and I have that book on my shelf in my office, and it gives the names of the 80-some thousand French Jews of France that were taken to their death by the Nazis and by the Vichy government. So this all happened when Maurice was being taken. This all happened when people were just looking behind their blinders and just in their apartments and doing nothing. Why? Fear? Feeling powerless? Protecting family? Greed? Hatred of Jews? Anti-Semitism? Or combination of all those? That's possible. But is that the right thing to do? Well, my conviction, biblical conviction, that we can apply to today is that we cannot afford to be bystanders anymore. And I'm not saying that this particular church is a church of bystanders. But I'm speaking, generally speaking, Christians, there's too many Christians today who are still looking the other way when it comes to doing something for Israel or something for their Jewish community. I mean, Israel right now is having a really tough time. Well, you've got Jewish people next door, maybe. You've got Jewish people in the store, in the school, in the bank, at the grocery store. You've got Jewish neighbors. You live in an area. There's Jewish people everywhere. When God put us in the diaspora, He did a very good job. We're all over the place. And so supporting supporting Israel in a time of war is necessary, but it also, we don't want to forget that there's something we can do locally wherever we live. And that, I want you to keep this in mind. Now, I'm not a big sports fan. Actually, I don't care about sports at all. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say this publicly in Texas. I realize this is a very dangerous proposition. But, so I did not watch the Super Bowl. I just not interested. I'm going to watch basketball. So, good. So, but that's how much I don't do sports. But there was an ad. How many saw it? An ad during the Super Bowl. I want to show it to you because that is where we need to be. So let me see if we can play it. Sorry about the sound. It's coming from the computer, not from the audio, so we'll do our best. This is who we need to be, Mr. Cody. This is the man I want all of you to be. And we are going to need to be this guy. If you think that this graffiti is just a symbol of what's going on, it's not a symbol of what's... It's everywhere in the world right now. In France, I showed you some stencil on walls. You know, but there were some graffiti that were taken in Dallas 2 weeks ago. A council member of somewhere in Dallas somewhere had their graffiti put on their home. It happens almost every day. It's just, I can't keep up. It used to be like once a month, once a couple times a month, I would get reliable sources sending me that kind of stuff. That's every day. Multiple times a day. I wake up every morning and my email box is full of those reports. I have to pick and choose the one that I can really use to really send a message. I'm really glad this ad was put together. It doesn't say much, but it says it all. Do not be a bystander. So, the current events and the global rise of antisemitism, we've talked about what happened on October 7th this morning. And so I'm going to go very quickly on this. I'm going to remind you that this was the heaviest Jewish death toll since the Holocaust. And what happened is that it unleashed unprecedented anti-Semitism and also a lot of cartoons. I picked up those cartoons in the last couple of weeks, and I want you to notice something. All the cartoons that I'm going to show you are going to paint something about Israel, but it's actually the exact opposite. Everything that those cartoons from the Middle East are showing about Israel is exactly what's happening. It's what Hamas is doing and what the world is supporting. So, for instance, here is the American hand holding the angry wolf or dog eating a poor Palestinian kid right there. So it's America controlling, holding the leash of Israel, but Israel is going after Palestinians. And that's exactly what's going on in the news, right? Like it's opposite. How about this one? Netanyahu drinking blood of Palestinians. In case you didn't pay attention, the glass he's drinking from is in the shape of the Gaza Strip. Okay? Okay, here's the truth if I know it. Israel is controlling the news. Really? Really? Israel, if we were controlling the news, it would look a lot better. Okay? This is the opposite. This is Israel, the Jewish people with the demonized Jewish people hiding behind the face of humanity. How about this one? Netanyahu putting, if you see in the oven on the left side, there is the color of the fake Palestinian flag. Now you know it's fake because you've seen the real one this morning. So you see Netanyahu here with a swastika on his armband, putting Palestinians in the ovens. We, the Jews, have been called for the last several decades now the new Nazis of the Middle East. That's what we're being called. Okay, so this is not news, but this is, it keeps being fed. You know what's amazing to me is that I haven't seen any cartoons about the Arabs done by the Jews. I can't find them. I'm sure they exist, okay? Israel's not perfect. The Israeli government is not perfect. The Jews are not perfect. We all need Jesus like the Palestinians, like everybody else. Okay? There's no special gospel for, you know, for the Gentiles, and then the Jews were in because, you know, we're Jews, you know, we're the chosen people. No, we all need the same gospel. But there's something about the way Jewish people are not responding, which gives me great pride of being a Jewish. How about this one? Israel is silencing the world. Yeah, I wish we could. I don't think it's happening. And Netanyahu is feasting on dead bodies. This one doesn't even need a caption. But you see a Palestinian hospital destroyed on the right and the Palestinian flag on the left. And of course, Netanyahu in the Nazi outfit with a little mustache like Hitler. And he's putting all the Palestinians in concentration camps. So that is what we are looking at in the cartoons. So that's looking at the present. Now, redeeming the past is, you know, is changing the what happened with the bystanders and not being that, not being the bystanders of the 21st century. Looking at the present is to realize what is happening right now. But now, what do we do as far as acting in the present? What can we do? Well, there's three things we can do. Number one, prayer. Okay? Now, prayer for peace. Peace, there's different kinds of peace in the Bible. Absence of war, which is good. But the ultimate peace, I would call it the absence of evil, if you want. Yeshua's messianic reign in Jerusalem. Although evil will be released for a short time at the end of the messianic kingdom. I gotta be precise because Dr. Andy Woods is watching me, and if anything wrong is in my theology, he's gonna go, "You said that, but you know." So I gotta make sure I dot all my T's and I cross all my I's, or is that the other way around? So, but prayer for peace, that's important. In prayer for peace, Psalm 122:6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. We've heard it already a couple of times this morning. May they prosper who love you. Absolutely. But friends, you might not hear what I'm going to say. Psalm 122:6 is a good foundation, but we got to move on. We got to keep doing this, but we have to really move on from just praying for the peace of Jerusalem. We have to do more than that. Because right now, the Jewish community globally, is really, really in need of friends. And the real friends, the Christians who really get their Bible, who get the importance of Israel and the importance of the Jewish people in the end times, are the real friends of Israel, people like you. And we need to do something. And so that's, you know, as we keep moving, I want you to keep that in mind. So, prayer for peace is good. Prayer for the messianic peace, you know, that's good too, of course. Isaiah 2:4, he shall judge between the nations and shall decide disputes for many peoples, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn of war anymore. So we pray, if you pray for the messianic peace, you pray for the kingdom, the Jewish messianic kingdom that we're all going to be part of, which means you pray for the return of Yeshua, of Jesus. So that's good. We start with prayer. But again, we don't stop there. That is the foundation. Okay? The next thing we need to do is speak up. This has become the next couple of verses, and actually 62:6. Let me read 62:1, and I'll move to the next one. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not keep quiet, until her righteousness goes forth like brightness, and her salvation like a torch that is burning. And then my new live verse, I see myself in this verse, okay? On your walls, O Jerusalem, I have appointed watchmen all day and all night. They will never keep silent. You who remind the Lord, take no rest for yourselves. I don't believe, ruffle some feathers, but as long as I'm okay with Dr. Andy Woods, I'm okay. I don't believe in modern day prophets, but I see myself as a watchman on the wall. I have been speaking up for 23 years. People look at me funny for a long time. And I wish I was in a place right now where I was not able to say I told you so. And I'm not going around feeling I told you so, but that's where we are. I've seen this for 23 years, studying history and how the wave of anti-Semitism was going ebb and flow and getting a lot worse than where it is today. So I will not stop until the rapture. I will not stop until God takes me home. This is why I started this new ministry, to speak up and to educate people, to let you know where it is, what it is, and what we can do to make a change. So number one, pray. Number two, speak up. But speak up is good, but sometimes they're just words. So let's reach out. That's where the rubber meets the road, okay? There's a great passage that I have grown to really appreciate in the last couple of years, and especially maybe in the last year, is the parable of the sheep and the goats it's speaking of something that will take place in Revelation, but it's in Matthew 25. For I was hungry, and this is Yeshua speaking to a group of Gentiles who have were left behind, and got saved during the tribulation, reached out to the Jewish people that were being persecuted in very, very badly, as we'll see in a few minutes, and they reached out and they went to help the Jewish people, to protect them, to rescue them, to feed them, like in the words of Yeshua, for I was hungry and you gave me something to eat, and I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink, I was a stranger and you invited me in, naked and you clothed me, I was sick and you visited me, I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, thirsty, or give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked, or clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison, or and come to you, the king, Yeshua, the Messianic king? The king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not, that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. These Gentile Christians have a special place in my heart, because they're going to go and help the Jewish people during a time where they're going to have to take care of their own lives during the tribulation. And I see them as... I have a name for them. I call them the new righteous among the nations. Let me explain what the righteous among the nations were, because we still find them today. There's not that many, but they exist. And this is my final challenge to all of us. The righteous among the nations were Gentiles who were recognized for their rescuing of Jewish people during the Holocaust era. Okay, they went out of their way to help Jewish people, to rescue them and protect them. And there are stories. There's like probably about 22,000 of these people. If I throw some names at you, you'd go like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Corrie ten Boom, Oskar Schindler, Raoul Wallenberg, all those names, you've heard, or you might have seen movies about them. They were Gentiles who actually went the extra mile, I would say the extra many miles, to help rescue Jewish people. And I see these Gentiles in the tribulation as the new righteous among the nations. But I also see a principle. It will take place. You know, I'm pre-mill, pre-trib, pre-everything. You know what? So I believe the next event is going to be the rapture. But I see a principle in the way they're going to behave with Jewish people. The way that these Gentiles are going to say, oh, you know what, I'm a believer now. I got saved. I understand the place of the Jewish people in God's plan. I want to go out of my way to help Jewish people. That principle, why can't we apply today? We're not in the tribulation. The rapture hasn't taken place. But that principle can be applied today. And I'll give you a very good reason at the end of this message. But going back to the Gentiles of the Holocaust era, I want to introduce you to a couple. They don't look much like anything. It's Pierre and Ida Daricot, two not so famous righteous among the nations. Some of you have seen those pictures because you've heard me before, you've seen it, but it's a story that I love to repeat. So Pierre and Ida Darico were two farmers that actually rescued a few people on their farm in the last 2.5 years of the war, and that from 42 on. And they rescued Evelyn Wansvig and her two cousins, and they stayed on that farm for about 2 years. And in 2013, Evelyn Wansvig, that little old lady on the picture under the yellow arrow, reunited with the Darico's two sons on each side of her as they received the Yad Vashem, the memorial in Jerusalem, Yad Vashem medal on behalf of their deceased parents. By the way, when their parents died, after they received the medal in 2013, they received the highest honor given to a Gentile, which is that medal of the righteous Gentiles, and they immediately, posthumously, became citizens of Israel. It happens at the same time that you receive the medal. You become an honorary citizen of Israel. What an honor, okay? So those two farmers who had no weapons, probably no education, just a farm and some food on the farm, already had a family of six, and they took in three Jewish kids until the end of the war. And that little lady, Evelyn, was saved by that family of Gentiles, and she made it through the end of the war. She went back to Paris to go back into the house where she grew up, where her father was hiding, if you remember the beginning of the story, in the basement. And that's Evelyn marrying George Melnick. For 63 years they were married, and yes, they had a very good-looking son. So I would not be here speaking to you if it was not for that family of farmers being righteous Gentiles. And mom and dad are with the Lord because I was able to lead both of them to the Lord 11 years ago. We'll see them again. And so, but the important part, you know, is that this family of farmers, they didn't care if there were more people doing what they were doing in the village around them. They didn't care if the Nazis were going to come. They were Gentiles who wanted to help Jews. They didn't want to take any money for it. They were risking their own lives. And those things are what constitutes the criteria to make somebody eligible to become a righteous among the nations. But I am looking right now at the new righteous among the nations. And I want to talk to you, and I need to close here because we're almost done, about the time that's coming in the tribulation. We're not going to be in the tribulation. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Okay. That was not loud enough.
Amen.
You heard it. Okay. So, we're not going to be in the tribulation. But look at this. This the time of Jacob's trouble, Zechariah 13:8-9, it will come about in all the land declares the Lord that the two parts in it will be cut off and perish, but the third will be left in it. I will bring the third part to the fire, refine them as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. They will call on my name, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, blessed is you who comes in the name of the Lord, and I will answer them, and I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God. At the end of the tribulation, this is what's going to happen. The Jewish people will, the ones who will survive, many of them, because of what the Gentiles, those new righteous among the nations, will do. They will survive, and that one third will become the Israel of God, of Galatians 6:16. It will become the remnant of Israel. All at once, they will become the believers. But that happens through the witness and the protection and the rescuing of the new righteous among the nations. Now, if it was to happen today, and that was always bothering me, I just love telling the story. If it was to happen today, 15 million Jews in the world, 10 million would die, 5 million would survive, and that 5 million would be the one third of Zechariah 13:8-9 that will call upon the one who they have pierced, and Jesus comes back. By the way, Dr. Reagan said that this morning. Let me repeat it. Jesus is not coming back until the Jewish people call him. You realize that has nothing to do with you? Israel has to call Yeshua back, and he comes back. But if there's no Jew to call Jesus to come back, then Satan doesn't lose his job and he doesn't like where he's going to retire. It's not Florida. It's harder. So if he can get rid of the Jews, there you go. Now you have anti-Semitism, a demonic and irrational hatred of Israel and the Jewish people. That's what it is. Okay? And so we have one-third, two-third. Well, today, if it was today, it would be 15 million, 10 million, 5 million. But, be encouraged. God didn't give us a number. Thank you for that. He didn't give us a number. He gave us a percentage. What does that mean? Well, that means that if it's a percentage, today would be 10 million and 5 million. But from a premill, pre-trib perspective, any Jewish person saved before the rapture will reduce the number within the percentage. Do you understand that? If you share the gospel with your Jewish friends, you'll come with us in the rapture. This is your encouragement. This is where I want you to get off your tuches, which is Yiddish for tush. You get it? Okay. And be bold with your Jewish friends. But here is the one more thing I want to share with you. Because this, you say like, well, this is great, but what can I, I'm not going to be in the tribulation. Well, friends, we're not in a tribulation, but the Bible doesn't say anywhere that it wouldn't get worse before it gets better for us. Better for us, okay? So before the tribulation, before the rapture, things could get worse. I think we get a taste of that right now. I mean, my people, the Jewish people, are getting a taste of that right now. And it's going to get progressively worse. So about 3.5 years ago, some friends of mine, and just a half a dozen of us, we had a similar concept that the Lord impressed on our hearts. It was this. And we kind of thought this separately, and then we all got together and said, hey, I have the same thing. God put that on my heart too. What's going to happen to Jews when it gets really bad in America? 7.5 million Jews. What can we do? So we started getting together, and we've been meeting twice a week for the last 3 years now, and we formed a network of like-minded Christians who are saying one thing: when it gets bad for my Jewish friends or for a Jewish family, even if I don't know them, my house is open. And so we have built, and it continues to build. And I got to tell you, friends, since October 7th, it's been growing exponentially. A lot of people are saying, we're in. We don't collect money. We don't take donations. This is not a ministry. This is not an organization. This is not a mission. This is just a group of like-minded Christians who say, take my name, and if you need something, let me know. I can take a Jewish family, a Jewish person, and I want to be a new righteous among the nations. Because that's a biblical thing to do. Isn't it? So I want you to prepare in your heart, prepare in your mind for something like this. It's not for everybody. If you don't open your house, it's not because you're anti-Semitic, it's just because you can't. Or, I mean, I understand that, but many people will, and I'm counting on them. And again, we're not collecting money, it's just, there's a way to sign up. So again, that code right there is for this afternoon. If you get that code, when you go back to, if you already went this morning on this, okay, you'll get my notes for sure, but you also get, you'll get on the page. Now don't do it quite yet. Listen to me. Don't do it quite yet. Let me explain, because I got technically I'm done because I got 2 minutes left. Okay, can I? Okay, so you go on that page and you're going to connect with Shalom and Messiah. Now, this is our ministry. We go in faith. We do take donations because we do a lot more teaching and seminars and conferences. And so that ministry will accept donations. But then you'll have on the bottom of the screen, it's going to say network code. You put that code and it's going to take you, it's going to send you an email. You ask for whatever you want on the page, and it's going to send you an email saying, click here if you want this, click here if you want that. And there's going to be an email, a line that's going to say, click here if you want to be connected to the network. And that will take you to a page where you're going to give us information. We're going to give you directions. You're going to give information like, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I live on a farm, I drive a bus, I fly a plane. All that kind of stuff that would be helpful to us. And then down the road, I pray we never have to contact you. I'm afraid that's a little too utopian, okay? But down the road, somebody will reach out and say, hey, you live in that area. Could you host a Jewish family for a night, for a day, for a week, and then you're on your own. Again, we don't collect money. Technically, we don't exist. We don't exist on the web. We don't have a ministry presence. We don't have a brochure because we are the equivalent of a underground railroad for Jews. That's who we are. So that's separate from Shalom and Messiah, but Shalom and Messiah works with that group. So now you can scan, now you can sign up, and I'm not going to know who signs up by name. I'm not going to go knock on your door and sell you some Jewish Avon or Tupperware. I promise I won't do that. But friends, we live at such a time that right now I need to count on you. So if the Lord leads you to support a ministry at Shalom and Messiah, thank you in advance. We need it. But if the Lord leads you also to open your house for Jewish family, God bless you and Shalom. Thank you.